Right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lucien and Rob, for the invitation. And well, it's really a pleasure to be at the workshop entitled Indefinite Causal Structures. So in this talk, I will present some past work as well as some recent results based on ongoing work with John Barrett, Cyril Branciart, Robin Lawrence, and Julian Vex. These all results are somehow unified by a common theme, which is this recent idea of cyclic quantum causal models, which actually originated here in Perimeter in discussion with Robin in the workshop in the summer. So the main idea is of this notion of cyclic causal models is really an extension of the recent theory of quantum causal models that's been developed by John Barrett and co-workers, and Rob Speckens and Allen, and more recently myself and Robin Lawrence. Two processes that are not compatible with fixed order of the gates, but can include in particular dynamical and indefinite causal structures. So here is an outline of my talk. So I'm going to review in the first maybe half of the talk the process matrix framework and the main idea of quantum causal models in the acyclic case. And then I'll talk about how we generalize this notion of quantum causal models to include also processes, at least a certain class of processes with indefinite causal structures, so-called causally non-separable processes. This provides us a new perspective on these processes that were previously somehow deemed incompatible with a causal account, but now we can make sense of them in a precise way. I'll discuss some examples, which is the quantum switch and a specific process, a deterministic non-causal process that was discovered by Baumeller and Wolf. And then I'll discuss some applications of this theory. In particular, there is a subsystem structure implied by the theory of causal models that we can use to prove a characterization of all the so-called unitarily extendable bipartite processes. And I will show that they are essentially variations of the quantum switch of the most general kind that Giulio described. And this actually has some rather interesting implications. Now, this has a little bit to do with the topic of discussion that we ended without finishing, which concerns the notion of realizations of the quantum switch. And along the talk, I'm going to be discussing here also the sense in which I believe that experiments can be seen to be realizations of the quantum switch. And we can make precise sense of the intuition that you said about what the photon experiences of the gates in different orders, but in a way different from the way I believe you think about it. And so this is this notion that certain processes have realizations on time delocalized systems. So the application that I will present, I think this is the most striking result I will report, is that actually there are tripartite unitarily extendable processes with indefinite causal structure. They can violate causal inequalities that have realizations on time delocalized systems in the sense that I will mention in the talk. And at the end, I will discuss what would an implementation of this, which is extremely simple because they're really classical processes, what does it imply about the variables involved? And this again is something that we can phrase in the language of cyclic causal models. So as Lucien mentioned already, one of the motivations for the investigation of indefinite causal structure is this big gap that exists between quantum theory and general relativity, which is part of it is, in essence, a conceptual gap, which has to do with the fact that general relativity is a theory that describes dynamical causal structures, but it is a deterministic theory, whereas quantum theory is normally formulated assuming a background causal structure, but we know that things can be indefinite there. And although I will not go as far as to even attempt to answer how these things might be unified, I believe that this study of indefinite causal structures it at least makes a step in this direction. More specifically, as to cite Lucien, who coined the term indefinite causal structures, I mean, it is reasonable to expect that somehow in the quantum theory of gravity we'll have dynamical causal structure and something that we may intuitively regard as indefinite causal structure in the way that other physical quantities in quantum theory can be indefinite. And so he developed the causaloid formalism, the causaloid framework as an abstract general framework compatible with general probabilistic theories in which one can attempt to understand how to describe physics in operational terms in such contexts in which no predefined causal structure is given and things can be probabilistic and even indefinite. And the process matrix framework that we developed with Fabio Costa and Charles Bruckner is in a way a realization of the causaloid framework, although we did not do it in that way. I later understood that it is in fact a very particular realization of Lucian's theory. So the process matrix framework, I presume most of you are familiar with, but I will quickly go through it. It is based on this idea that the way we originally thought of it is you have these experimenters that will be associated with elementary types of operations on each defined on an input Hilbert space, on an output Hilbert space. And these different experimenters are, as Bob Charlie, et cetera, they don't reside in some global space-time, but in their local laboratories, we were imagining that there is a well-defined notion of causal order, like a person receives a system, performs an operation on it, sends a system out, and based on some reasonable assumptions, the main theory to describe the correlations between the outcomes of such experiments is provided by this formula, which looks very similar to Born's rule, except that it can now describe signaling correlations, because it can have situations like in time-like separated experiments. There is this object here is called the process matrix. These are the choice representations of the CP maps associated with the local outcomes. And there are some conditions that this process matrix should satisfy. In particular, it's positive semi-definite, and it's normalized on channels, which corresponds to the idea that probabilities are normalized. They sum up to one. As we've heard already, there is this theory of higher order operations, and the process matrix is, in fact, an example of that. You can see it like that. It's a transformation that takes can be defined on extended channels, and basically it's such that whenever you plug in extended channels in this intermediate box, it produces you a new channel. This is an equivalent formulation of the process matrix. Here is an example. A very one compatible with fixed order of the gates or the operations of Alice and Bob. This is what we may call a process matrix, which describes in a situation in which Alice is not in the causal past of Bob, in which case Alice could not signal to Bob. And it's been shown by Julia and co-workers. In fact, the most general higher order transformation compatible with this is, in fact, has a realization in practice in the form of a circuit. This is called a quantum comp. The thing around this circuit fragment, the operator of this circuit fragment is called a quantum comp. More generally, we may conceive of probabilistic mixtures of such causally ordered scenarios, and this is what one may call a causally separable process matrix, which we defined in the original paper with Fabio and Chaslov. And in fact, one can root this in a very precise, rigorous theory based on the notion of causal correlations and what it would mean that there is a precise definition that's been developed in these papers, for example, with myself and Cristina Ghiarmazzi, and also recently by Vex Abbott and Branciart. There is a precise notion of causal separability we can formulate, which we can interpret as describing scenarios in which there is a process with definite causal structure, there is a definite causal order, more precisely. There is a definite causal order between the operations of the individual parties. And so what I want to point out is that this is, in general, not trivial theory. In particular, in the multipartite case, there is the possibility of having definite yet dynamical causal order, because there are situations such as this one where, for instance, what Alice does here in the past might influence the order in which the operations of Bob and Charlie happen in the future. And this is very intuitive and compatible with our understanding of causality. what this is taken into account. And of course, as we wouldn't be here if it wasn't the case that there are process matrices that are not causally separable. And the way we first formulated this in the language of causal separability was in the bipartite case with Fabio and Chaslov, was in terms of what we call a violation of a causal inequality. So this is a device-independent argument for the possible correlations you may imagine establishing between two parties, that if you obtain correlations stronger than a certain bound, you can argue that it would not have been the case that there was a definite order between the operations. So the original causal inequality that we wrote up in that paper was based on the following setup, where we imagine that Alice is given a bit A and Bob two bits, B and B prime, and they have to output some guesses, bits X and Y, and under the assumption that these bits are free, that I'll describe in the next slide, one can argue that in a scenario in which a definite causal order exists between the parties, there is a bound on the following probability of the guesses given the inputs that they receive. The assumptions are, I want to here to emphasize something because I'm going to revisit them slightly towards the end of my talk. The way we formulated the assumptions, it was all based on this idea that we talk about events, and this framework describes certain notion of events that maybe physical observers could, like human observers even could experience or observe. So the first assumption was that the existence of a causal order between all the events involved in the experiment, which includes systems entering the laboratory, let's say Alice obtaining a random bit out of maybe a safe or that's provided to her by a referee, then producing an outcome, sending a system out of the laboratory. And the assumption was that there is a partial order that we can interpret as causal order on all these events, also compatible with the idea that the receiving a system in a given lab is in the past of a system going out of the lab. Then there was a notion of free choice, which is that the input variables in that particular example on the previous slide, the bits, the input bits that are provided to Alice and Bob, they can only be correlated, they're chosen freely in some sense, can be correlated only with events in their causal future. And in addition, there was a closed laboratory assumption, which is very important in order to forbid, in such a scenario, two-way communication between the parties. And that assumption says that the output variable produced by Alice can be correlated with the input variable given to Bob only if Alice receives a system in her lab after Bob has sent out a system. I mean, we already know that the input of Bob is free, so it can only be correlated with events in the future. But here, we further demand that it could be correlated with Alice's output only if Alice receives the system after Bob has sent out the system. And under these assumptions, one can prove the inequality that I showed, and one can understand all causal inequalities. What I wanted to emphasize here is that the formulation of 2 and 3 requires first to assume one, which is that there was a causal order between the events. And we had the intuition, and particularly Fabio had a very strong intuition that we should be able to somehow formulate the notion of closed laboratories in a way that does not necessarily presume the causal order, because he felt that even in the abstract case of the in which we have indefinite causal order, there is still the case that the laboratories are closed. And I will mention that that in the language of causal models, we are able to, in fact, state this assumption in such a way. So this will be important later. So, I mean, we show that there is an example of a process matrix that can violate a causal inequality. It is compatible with these assumptions. So, at least in principle, if one could perform these experiments, there were on this process matrix with certain local quantum instruments that we found. I mean, it's compatible with this idea that you can violate these assumptions. If you believe that the free choice assumption and the closed laboratory assumptions hold in such a realization, but remember they are formulated like that, if the assumption of causal order holds, then you would conclude that, you would have to conclude that one cannot possibly hold if you're sure that 2 and 3 must hold if one hold it. So now there has been a lot of development in this theory. I will not go into details, but we now understand the theory of causal inequalities, at least in general, you know, the correlations that respect causal inequalities, they form polytopes in the space of all correlations, which is the so-called causal polytopes. But what we have understood is that violation of a causal inequality is not the same as causal non-separability. So this is just a very general schematic. The space of causally non-separable processes is larger than those that violate causal inequalities, because there are some processes that are causally non-separable and yet they cannot violate causal inequalities. In fact, there are different notions of causal separability that one may introduce, and there are different inclusions of these different notions. I will not go much into detail about that. But here is an example. We already heard about the quantum switch, and this is one example of a process that is causally non-separable but cannot violate causal inequalities. I mean, it is defined as a supermap, as we heard from Giulio, and it's one that we may interpret in some sense as describing superpositions of different causally ordered processes. One can view it also as a process matrix by plugging in here one party and another and invoke the concept of causal separability to say in a precise sense in what way this is not compatible with definite causal order of the different boxes. And it's very simple to actually see that it is not causally separable, although the precise notion of causal separability is a bit involved, considering the possibility for dynamical causal orders. But when it has been established, one can show that the process is not causally separable because it is a unitary process, its Choi representation is proportional to a rank one projector. That's not compatible with definite causal order because Alice can signal a little bit to Bob and Bob can signal a little bit to Alice. And one can also prove, it's been shown in these papers, that no causal inequality can be violated with the quantum switch. And we heard already about advantages over causally separable processes. I will not speak about that anymore, but I will speak about the implementations a little bit, because we heard already there have been implementations of the quantum switch, and this is one other reason, apart from it being a simple process for which a lot of theoretical results were proven, it is also the process that we know how to implement in the laboratory. The question is, in what way can this be regarded as a proper implementation of the abstract concept of a higher order supermap that's causally non-separable? Well, in the paper that Giulio, paper by myself, that Giulio mentioned, this is actually the main topic of that paper, is to address this question. And so I argue in that paper that there is a precise sense in which one can understand these experiments as describing the higher order transformation of interest. But the twist is that this transformation, the input and output spaces of this transformation, are what we may call time delocalized quantum subsystems. I will illustrate this with a simple version of the quantum switch. It is this circuit, which also can be seen to implement the quantum switch. Here, Bob's operation is at a fixed time, and then depending on the value of the control qubit, Q, Alice's operation will be applied before or after Bob. There is also a symmetric implementation, and the same arguments can be extended there. So, I mean, obviously, this David, Bob, and Charlie's operations, they are not questionable because we know what they mean. The problem is, in what sense can we say that Alice's operation takes place within this implementation? It's particularly one use of Alice's operation. So the main idea here is that if you look at this quantum comp, which consists of two controlled operations, it is a transformation. It is a unitary from the input systems to the comp to all the output systems. And one can show that it has the following form. In fact, it looks exactly like the unitary of Alice applied on certain systems. Tensored with the identity channel from some other systems. It's just that these systems, AI, the input of Alice and the output of Alice, they are what we call time delocalized systems. So the system of Alice is given by the algebra of observables, or the algebra of operators, not necessarily observables, which are of this form. You can see here that an operator O on Alice's input from the perspective of the other systems that are time local in this description, it has the following form. It's something like a controlled operator, we may interpret it, if you like, and similarly for the output system of Alice. So with respect to this, and this is a testable fact, you could even, if you like, you could prepare a state right into the input system of Alice, which is a particular subsystem of this tree. This you can do by elongating this wire. So this is one way in which you can insert a preparation right into the subsystem of interest. And you can make a measurement on the right output system. So you can do tomography, of course, of this. This is rather trivial because we can obviously do tomography on this circuit fragment. So this is not only just mathematical, but in some sense, there is a direct operational correspondence to doing tomography of this time localized operation in a way rather analogous to doing tomography on any operation, which is usually an operation on some space delocalized system, for instance, or whatever subsystem. With respect to the, if we properly identify the subsystems, one can show that the full experiment with respect to these systems, where these are time localized now, has this form, which is the form of the higher order transformation. So I would say that the higher order transformation does take place in this experiment. It is just one should view it as an operation on the right systems. And of course, Giulio was saying that in such a circuit, you know, the resource of interest is this. But I think that we should know that in a resource theory, it is us who defines what the resource is, which can be motivated by different practical considerations. And in particular, the resource might be this unitary. So you can imagine that you or somebody else has access to controlling those parameters in this experiment that correspond precisely to controlling and changing the unitary in that slot. So I think, in a similar way, I would say you can very well say, well, the resource is not this comp. The resource is the larger Hamiltonian that acts on all the fields, which actually is acting on some other fields in the laboratory. But effectively, by setting up the environments in a certain state, we effectively, on a certain system, obtain that gate. And in a similar way, on a certain subsystem, we obtain that gate. And it could be the resource of interest, depending what is given to you in your problem. So I think that there is a very fair way of understanding these implementations as realizations of the quantum switch.
So may I ask a question? Yes. So what is the vertical arrow in this second picture? So in the first vertical arrow is time. How about the second picture?
No, this is just a time.
Yes. How about the next picture?
Here.
Yes.
There is no...
There's an arrow from input to output. Huh?
Yes, these are just the systems.
So what is the meaning of this arrow?
It is just a connection. This is a system, if you like, which in the Choi representation we would associate normally two systems. It will be like an entangled state, but it is really just the system. It's the connection from. It is the connection between two boxes.
So this means that these things that are there are not to be interpreted as quantum channel.
No.
Time arrow going from top to bottom.
I would not interpret them as channels in general, although they could be. One can add channels, but for me that
I mean the ones that are there, they are not.
These are not. These are just systems. These are just systems. Even they were here systems. I mean, here this was like actually kind of a channel. Yeah. But it didn't have to be a channel. It is a matter of where do you define. It could be just a single instance. It's just a matter of where does my box end.
So in the second picture, basically, the vertical arrow means nothing. So only the connections are relevant, right?
There isn't a vertical. Is there a vertical arrow here? In the connection. No, there isn't. No.
Could imagine that means.
If we were to imagine, yeah, that would. Yes.
So this picture only means connections.
Yes. That's correct. That's right. Yes. That would not be. If I were to put an arrow, that arrow, I don't know what it would be if I could. But that's an interesting question. But I don't know if I can do that. Yes. With respect to that arrow, if we interpreted it as time, we would have time loop.
Yes. My question is just. There is no arrow.
No, there isn't. There is no arrow. No. Actually, one can. I mean, in that paper, I generalized this result a little bit. There are other processes for which we can identify realizations on time delocalized systems. I just want to mention that there was an abstract proof that actually will turn out a little bit redundant after I send something, but later I will show it to be useful for the final result that I will present for tripartite processes. But essentially, it was about the notion of unitary processes. So the quantum switch is an example of a unitary process of a certain type. You know, Araújo, Fix, Navasquez, and Bruckner introduced this notion of unitary extendability of a process, which is essentially, you know, you can define it like that. If a given process can arise from, let's say, this is a bipartite one. If it can arise from a four-partite process of this type by plugging in a suitable input system and tracing out a suitable state on the past guy and tracing out the future guy, we say that it is unitarily extendable. They, in fact, propose this property to be something that we may expect from all physically realizable processes. The most important observation is that it's a non-trivial property. Although every process is a channel from the outputs of the parties to their inputs, and obviously it admits a unitary dilation, it is not the case that dilation would be a channel. And they showed in particular the bipartite process matrix that we found with Fabio and Chaslov is one that does not admit such a unitary extension. But for the class of processes that do, and in particular for their unitary extensions, I showed in that paper by some abstract means that, in fact, there is a realization on time delocalized systems, meaning that there is an experiment of that kind, just of the same form that I described, with a quantum comp around, such that this quantum comp can be seen as composed of the operation of Alice acting on specific time delocalized systems and some identity channel on the rest, and that identity channel is part of that. Very roughly, now in this published version of the paper, I have presented a rather detailed explanation of this argument. Roughly the intuition behind it is that, you know, if you're given, imagine that you had some kind of process of that type, what you can observe is that you could, in fact, if there was a realization, whatever that means, you can redefine these input and output systems of Alice, pushing them out all the way into, because this is a unitary, that unitary is going to map isomorphically that output system onto some subsystem of B0, BI, in principle, D0, BI, and CI. And similarly, some subsystem of the outputs, BI, A0 will be mapped onto, BI and CI. So that's the correct statement, on some subsystem of those. And some subsystem of D0 and B0 will be mapped onto AI. So by kind of redefining that those systems, if we were given such a realization, by moving those systems all the way onto the boundary of the other systems, we may think that there somehow the process has always been present exactly on the correlation between those systems. It's a bit more complicated than that. One can see the argument in the paper, but that permits us to actually state that implementation, which has smaller number of boxes written, is in fact equivalent to that guy here, which has more boxes for those very specific systems. Because in a sense, this extra box is always present at some of the given time local systems here. So D0, BI, B0, and CI, they are time local, and the AI and AO inputs and outputs of Alice, they are time non-local. Anyway, I'll come back later to that. And now I want to switch to the topic of cyclic causal models, which was really, I want to show that there is a sense in which you can understand those types of processes in a more precise fashion, what is going on with the causal relations inside them. And that is based on the idea of quantum causal models, specifically the framework that was developed by Allen et al., and which we recently extended. Just a note on notations here, because I'll be using some notations that are present in those papers, they don't correspond exactly to the notations I was using so far. So here is a note. First of all, the Choi representation that is used in this other approach is one which is a very nice one, kind of basis independent Choi representation defined on Hilbert spaces and dual Hilbert spaces. I will be using this type of notation, I think dating back to Lifer and Speckens, so maybe earlier, on this is like a conditional state, if you like, but it's something that really means a channel from system A. This is really the choice state of a channel from a system A to a system B. Now the nodes are called like that. The input and output Hilbert spaces will be labeled like that. You know, the CP maps inside the nodes are described by the transpose of the Choi operators and the process. This is really just a convention of the Choi isomorphism. And the process matrix, or also we call it process operator because of this basis independence, lives on the tensor product of input and output Hilbert spaces associated with each node. The main idea of this program to quantum causal models is very, it should mention very, in some sense, in spirit, it resembles or is rather similar to a theory that Fabio proposed, but it is different on an essential ingredient, and that is that here the notion of causal relation is understood to be about influence through unitary channels. Somehow this is the main idea, is that causal relations in a quantum world correspond to influences through unitary channels, which more precisely can be defined like that. Consider a unitary channel from two systems to two other systems. We say that there is no influence from A to D if the following mathematical property holds, which is if I trace out the C system, I see identity here on that Hilbert space, tensored with some channel from B to D, which is, this is the condition for no signaling for a channel. Such a channel does not permit signaling from A to D. So if this does not hold, we say that A is a direct cause of D through this channel, in the channel. And the main technical result based on which the kind of classification of quantum causal models can be argued to be can be seen to be based is the following result. Basically, if you're given a unitary channel where there are certain influence conditions, this arrows means that there is influence from a certain system to a certain other system through the channel, there is a certain factorization that holds for the Choi operator of this unitary, which looks like that. Basically, let us define Si to be the set of input systems that do not signal or cannot influence the system Bi. Doesn't need to be the full set, but any such set. Well, then we can write down that the Choi matrix of the unitary is a product of this kind of conditional states or channels going from the signaling parents, if you like, or a superset of the signaling parents to the given node. To a given output system of the channel. Here this Choi matrices, they commute for all of them. And somehow this notion of signaling through unitary channel can be immediately generalized, can be ex- induces a notion of signaling, a notion of influence or causal, direct causal influence in unitary processes. So consider a unitary process here, in particular, some input and output spaces could be trivial, like one-dimensional Hilbert spaces. We say that there is a yes. We say that AI is a direct cause. The node AI, now a node is described by a pair of Hilbert spaces, is a cause of AJ if there is an if there is an influence from the output of the first node to the input of the second node through this unitary channel, which is the process. Mm-hmm. And the same decomposition that I said holds for arbitrary unitary channels automatically is going to decompose a unitary process into, did I say that already? Well, I didn't, but it automatically is going to decompose the unitary process into a product of conditional states. So one can define the following notion, which was defined in the acyclic case. We say that a given process matrix now, a given process, which is generally some channel, not necessarily unitary, we can say that it is compatible with a causal structure where in the original paper, this is assumed to be a directed acyclic graph, if and only if it can be extended to a unitary process such that if there was no arrow in the graph, now you have no arrow in the new process, and the extension is such that you have a bunch of root nodes here, where each root node can at most influence one of the original nodes and this future node at the end. So the idea here is that somehow this the original process describes, it arises from the causal structure of some unitary where only local disturbances are missing. So in that sense, we can then say one can define the notion of a causal model as one can think of a causal model as something that contains the common causes for each of the nodes that it describes. So one can similarly define, one can define a Markov condition. We can say that given a DAG on a set of nodes, a process operator is Markov for it, if we can describe it like that. Here, one should understand that this is from the output systems of the parents of the node to the input system of that node. And one of the main theorems that kind of justifies the definition of causal model that's coming next in the general case is that one can show that the process matrix is compatible with a directed acyclic graph if and only if it is compatible with it. And in particular, one can further show that an acyclic quantum causal model, well, I have not spoken yet about causal models, but if it is, the process can arise from a quantum comp of this kind with a certain structure where this is just the local disturbance that's gonna affect the node coming up. Anyway, this justifies this definition. Yeah.
Is the unitary extendability really playing a crucial role there? Can you find counterexamples if you have a process?
Well, in the acyclic case, no. In the acyclic case, you can always find a unitary extension. The unitary dilation that you can find just for the channel itself automatically is a valid process. If the causal structure was a DAG. But this becomes different in the cyclic case. I will just describe now. I think I will go a bit faster here. Essentially, this we can define the notion of a quantum causal model in the following way. It's given by a DAG and a set of quantum nodes corresponding to the vertices of this DAG and a set of Choi operators of channels that commute pairwise, and their product is a process operator. This is a separate statement. It can be shown that it will be a process operator if you give me a set of channels for the DAG. So that is going to form a process operator, but it's not the case in the acyclic when we go to acyclic causal models. So, I just refer you to this paper for the implications and notions of conditional independence that one can develop in this theory of causal models. Now, I want to make this observation. So the notion of causal relation defined as influence through unitary channels, in particular immediately would allow us to speak about causal relations in arbitrary unitary processes. In particular, it can be thought of as providing a kind of causal account for all processes that admit unitary extensions. It's just that if the process is not compatible with fixed order of the slots, then the causal structure now, which is the collection of all these arrows of direct influence, will be a cyclic graph. Well, but our proposal is to actually then drop this assumption of acyclicity and develop a corresponding version of the theory for cyclic causal models, at least for allowing cyclic causal structures. And now a quantum causal model is given as follows. A directed graph, not necessarily acyclic, and a set of quantum nodes corresponding to the vertices of this graph and a set of channels that commute pairwise, but now we, under the condition that the product of these channels is a process operator. That was coming out for free before. Now it is a requirement in the definition. One can call this, again, a Markov condition. Similarly, one can define a classical version of that theory, which we call as classical split node models, which reduce to, in the cyclic case, there is a natural reduction to something we may call standard cyclic classical causal models. I want to emphasize that here now, not every directed graph admits a faithful causal model. In particular, there is like a bipartite process. There is no bipartite process supporting a causal model which of this kind, which is faithful. I mean, meaning that there, when you see an arrow, there can actually be signaling. And the following, however, if you consider this graph, it does not admit, but this one, for instance, does. Similarly, we can define compatibility with the directed graph as before, and we can prove.
So this thing of the reason is the unitarity, understand that you need to have enough Hilbert spaces to match.
Not so much. In general, it's just the case. It is just the case. The definition, this one.
No, the reason why you say not all can be an underlying model, but if you extend, they can. So
That I don't know if they always. Well, I believe always they should be true. Maybe with a common cause like that, it should probably be true.
You are showing it doesn't have to do with unitarity.
This one.
The fact that you cannot there, and you can.
Maybe it, in some way it has, but I don't see it as directly. It's just
okay.
There isn't. Something that can be a cause, it probably has to do somehow, but I'm not sure about the relation. But one can prove that exactly this type of model you cannot.
Thanks.
Because it would really mean, remember what the condition is. It just you have a product of two channels that commute. In this case, you just imagine a process matrix that's just a product of a channel from Alice to Bob and a product from Bob to Alice. That's not possible, so that's roughly the proof. And how it links to unitarity, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm sure there is a. All right, I'm gonna go very fast now. Essentially, in the same way, one can prove that compatibility, meaning the existence of a unitary extension with the right causal structure, implies Markovianity. The proof is analogous to the acyclic case. However, we don't know whether Markovianity implies compatibility. We think it's likely to be true, so we pose it as a conjecture. The non-trivial part is whether you can always find a unitary extension of any channel with the right causal structure. If you're given a channel that's Markov or some causal structure, the problem is whether this extension will be a valid process. That is what we don't know. An analogous conjecture can be formulated in the classical case. So here are some examples. The quantum switch, in particular, is a unitary process, and therefore it can be understood in the language of cyclic causal structures. And the causal structure looks something like that. There is more from this is the most interesting part, perhaps, for me, is that the causal structure implies certain subsystem, some algebraic structure on processes. In particular, for the quantum switch, we can gain a little bit of a finer grained understanding of precisely how the causal relations go about in it. And here I have used, without much explanation, this theory, the dot formalism, which was started in the Allen et al. Paper and recently has been extended by John Barrett and Robin Lawrence, applied to the case of the switch. Here we have this notion of separation into subspaces in each labeled by I, and each subspace factors into two subsystems, left and right, that go their own ways. That's roughly what is going on inside of the quantum switch. And it is these subspaces that somehow the information flows in them, and this is an intuitive understanding, and prevents you to coming back to create logical paradoxes. Here is the other example. This is a classical deterministic process which violates causal inequalities. By Baumeller and Wolf, it looks like that. One can see it as a process matrix which is diagonal in a certain basis. This also is a model. Now, we've seen that in the acyclic case, everything has a realization as a quantum comp. And one may ask whether everything that we can write down in this more general language of cyclic causal models also has realization. And in particular, do unitary processes have realization? Now, remember I told you that in the bipartite case, I gave an abstract proof that on time delocalized systems, we have realizations of unitary extensions of bipartite processes. Now, as it turns out, if you use this theory of subsystem decompositions, one can show that the bipartite processes that are unitary extendable are in fact the extensions of variations of the quantum switch. And I will very, very briefly just mention how the proof goes. It is as follows. Consider a unitary extension. There is the following property for all valid processes that a single party cannot signal to her own past. So in particular, there is no, if I was to write down the possible signaling arrows here, there can be no signaling from A out to A in. So there is no arrow here. Now, one can consider, from given such a unitary extension, imagine tracing out the future die. You would obtain something like that. And this one can show this is from, one can prove the following subsystem decomposition to hold for a process with these influence relations. Basically, the output Hilbert space is going to factor, is first going to decompose into subspaces, and in each subspace you have left and right system, and the full process matrix will have such a form. And one can show then that it will always be the case that no matter what you prepare in the past node, effectively for Alice and Bob, you're always going to get a mixture of processes. That's because there are constraints on this from the allowed terms in the process matrix. If one allows signaling, if this say allows signaling from A to B, this will allow no signaling from B to A, and vice versa. And so this is used to show, I will skip the proof. Now, here was the proof that it can be used to show that all of them are causally separable. Well, this may look a little bit like a negative result, because now, again, everything is back to the quantum switch. Result for Julian, but actually it turns out that we can argue now there are tripartites. This implies that all tripartite processes that have unitary extensions admit realizations on time delocalized systems, which in particular includes this causal inequality related processes. And the proof is quite simple. If this is a unitary process, whenever you plug in a unitary of this type, and remember every local instrument can be done like that, what you get is a unitary process. So this was shown by Araújo and co-workers. And since this unitary process is a some variation of the quantum switch, what this means is that it has a universal realization of the following kinds. Alice and Bob, conditionally on some control systems, this is a rough sketch, the unitaries are applied, in this time, in this controlled fashion, in different orders. And in between, the most general thing you can have is a supermap. It's some kind of a quantum comp around them. And so it is in this quantum comp that one can argue that Charlie's operation is contained, and the argument is very similar to the one I gave in my paper in the bipartite case for unity channels. So Well, this is one example, the purification, or the, sorry, the reversible dilation of the Baumeller-Wolf process. It has a realization like this. This was found by Julian Vex. Actually, he was the one who first realized that possibility. And he found an explicit circuit that would correspond to what I just described you. And one can identify precisely the input and output systems of Charlie in this circuit. Alice and Bob, they are just, again, timed localized systems of the type I was describing earlier. And Charlie is a certain timed localized system around. This is closely related to other circuits and this has been found earlier in the literature. I mean, this does not have the usual type of interpretation of controlled order, because here, in a sense, you are undoing the unitary later. And if you want to naively interpret what's going on in the circuit, you're somehow undoing the unitary of Charlie, depending on what Alice and Bob have done. And so the unitary either happens before them or after them, somehow controlled by what they do in the middle. But that's like the naive interpretation. The rigorous thing to say is that there are these precise subsystems on which the process takes place. And now, last, I think I will finish with this slide. I would say, now imagine this is a classical process. You can really do it on your desk. I mean, you can construct some sequence of classical transformations of classical variables that are going to be doing that circuit that I described. It can violate causal inequalities. What does that mean now? And I think here is the thing, and the link to what I was saying about the assumptions of behind causal inequalities. We can try to make this, I mean, these are time delocalized variables now. So if you try to invoke the original sequence of arguments, you say, I will assume that there is a causal structure on these variables, and then if I really believe that there is this causal order on all of them, and if I believe that the free choice and blah, 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 then I have to conclude that there was no really causal order on them. Well, here you're starting with variables that are already time non-local, so maybe it's not a big surprise that there will be no well-defined causal order on all of them. But what you can say is, if you start imagining a more precise implementation and you associate classical nodes at the input and at the output here, well, what we can say is that those time non-local variables, they obviously describe a cyclic model, but that's not very surprising, because the quantum switch and even the classical switch describes a cyclic model in our language. What is surprising here is that this cannot be understood as arising from by something like a switch. It is not a dynamical order that can produce this correlation, so there is no disinterpretation. What we're having is, here is the closed laboratory assumption, is expressed as in the language, that there is no direct arrow from this variable to any of the other variables. So this kind of screens off the correlations between X, A, in and others. These are the free choices expressed merely by the fact that these are just root nodes in the graph. And so, yeah, the conclusion would be, well, there exist classical variables, non-local, with these properties. They don't arise from dynamical classical circuits, but they nevertheless are classical, so I don't know what that means. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, we're eating into our break time. If there's one urgent question, we'll take it. Okay, let's thank Anyun again, and we will...